From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We have another action-packed hour ahead of us. A little bit later on, Blink from BlinkOnCrime.com will be here to update us as to what's been going on at the Casey Anthony Trail. Lots to talk about, everything from a big glass of Haterade to some rotting hamburger. I know that's what I'm going to have for supper tonight. But when you think about the personification of what's called class, strength, compassion, just an all-around good person, someone who has suffered immensely but has turned that suffering around to benefit others, there's only one person that I can think of that jumps ahead of most others, and that's Beth Holloway. I sat down with Beth Holloway this afternoon, and I thought I'd share that with you. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. It's always a big kick, and it's been a while since we've had Beth Holloway on the show. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm fine. How have you been?
I'm good.
You're one of the busiest ladies that I know. You are out there. You're talking. You're a victim's advocate. You're telling Natalie's story. And you're working with Lifetime, and something that I find very exciting is Vanished with Beth Holloway. Tell us about that.
Well, I am. I think it's when I think back of how Vanished evolved, I think of the years, and of course, Red was there with me. We have spent and going on site in missing persons cases across the U.S., whether it was to aid with media engagement, whether it's to help connect the family to resources, maybe communicate with the law enforcement, and just bring some support or hope to the families. So I had been doing that just quietly and on my own, so I never could have imagined being able to take it up to the level to where Vanished would be, hosted or shown on Lifetime, to where we could help people at a much greater level. So I never could have imagined getting to this platform. So I'm very honored to have this opportunity.
I know you're a humble person, Beth, but some of the reviews that I've read about Vanished are very impressive. In fact, you've been compared to John Walsh.
Well, I mean, of course, I think that would be a compliment to be compared anywhere close to John Walsh. I think he has just, of course, done an incredible and amazing job of dedicating his life to finding criminals, and I'm dedicating my life to finding victims in missing persons cases. So, but thank you.
If you're just tuning in, Beth Holloway joins us, and it's always a big kick to have her on the show. Now, let's talk about that a little bit. Now, we can go back and talk about May 30th, 2005, and I'm sure to you that seems like yesterday. But your advocacy work, if I can use that term, and helping victims, families with missing loved ones, prevention, all those sorts of topics. How much of your life now is devoted to that? Is there any time for Beth just to be Beth and sit back and relax?
I'd say pretty much everything that I do in here forward is a result of a course of what happened 6 years ago when Natalie disappeared. You know, I made a commitment early on that I would find a way to share the hard lessons we learned, and I developed the Mayday 360, which is for all travelers. I've established the Natalie Holloway Resource Center is for all families who have a missing loved one, and that's why I'm doing the TV series Vanished, so all Americans see that missing persons cases in this country are practically an epidemic, and that's what I focus on. You know, whether I find time for me in between, I try to balance, but what really fulfills me is to be, as I said, being able to share the hard lessons that we learned with others, because so many people reached out to us in our time of need.
No, when you sit down and you look at the media, and you are a media person now with your television program, and you see how coverage is done with these high-profile cases, of course, with the Internet, Scared Monkeys as a good example. Is there enough being done through the media to help families and victims?
Oh, that's a hard question for me to answer. I just, I think it's there's always needs in these families' cases, and there are just so many. And I think the problem is, as I said, there are just thousands of people missing in this country, and we just try to pick as many as we can. And bringing attention to the cases and hoping that someone will come forward with an issue. I mean, it's just every day it seems like there is a new case. And, it's difficult for the families to stay focused and committed because you do begin to tire out. And sometimes it's not so quick. Mm-hmm. In the search for your missing loved one, I've always compared it to a marathon at times, and you just have to pace yourself and keep... keep pressing forward. Even if there's not media attention to your missing loved one's case, there are still things that you can do to put into motion to keep the investigation and the progress moving forward.
Let's talk a little bit, Beth, if you don't mind, about the movie Justice for Natalie Holloway. Some would say, and I've seen it, a good broadcast, some would say as much press as you can get is good press. Some would say that the TV movies just didn't tell the story the way they should have. I'm curious in your thoughts.
Well, for me, I felt that they did a great job. Of course, I've been pleased with everything that Lifetime has done, and I think Tracy Pollan is an amazing actress, and it was an honor for me that she chose to play the role again. For me, I felt the what I saw, the scenes were extremely intense and put you in the moment. Yeah. And so I was pleased with it.
Yeah, and again, I thought so too. And kudos to Lifetime; they've been doing a great job. Beth Holloway is here. Let's go back May 30th, 2005. And again, Beth, I'm sure it seems like yesterday. If you could reflect a little on what's gone on in the past 6 years, and I've always said on this program, Beth, that there's justice is served in many different forms. It doesn't necessarily have to be in a court of law. But justice will be served, I hope, and we all pray in this case someday. Let's talk about that.
Well, of course, in every missing person's case, you hope that justice is served, and that's the whole point, is bringing the perpetrators responsible to justice. So, as I said, sometimes families can have recovery of a loved one's remains with no perpetrator in prison. Some families can have a perpetrator in prison with some... without recovery of their loved ones. So, of course, that's the ultimate goal, is to put the people in prison where they belong.
And justice, yeah, like you say, is it's a funny thing. With Joran van der Sloot now, and I'm not going to dwell too much on him because I think the less press he gets, the better, in my opinion. The answers should be coming to your family. But Joran now in Peru, lawyer has just resigned. The Flores case. How much time have you been able to sit back and reflect on that?
As I said, I'm just staying focused on what I can do and just keeping the momentum moving for the Natalie Holloway Resource Center, Vanished, and Mayday 360. I mean, that's something I can do and can make a difference in. I can't change what happened in the past, so I just look forward, just keep moving forward.
And what a great way to respond to that, Beth. It's now, what are we, June 8th? Schools are planning trips, graduation classes. In fact, I have a son who's graduating the 12th grade this year. And I know I've asked you this before, but let's talk a little bit about families and tips that you can give to families who have kids that are planning on taking a school trip somewhere.
Well, absolutely. They can visit the website, Natalie Holloway Resource Center, to get some tips, some travel safety tips. Also, Lifetime.com on the Vanished website has some travel safety tips. So I think with that being said, just to visit these sites and see the tips opens up that personal discussion with your young traveler. And you can begin to play out different scenarios or things that might be concerning you, or just to give your young traveler a heads up. I think a lot of our young adults, when they go to these destination and vacation areas, some of them are choosing the less traveled areas. And you just have a false sense of security, and you think, well, you're there to have a good time and relax with your friends, but just remind them that there might be others there who have a different agenda. So I think it's good to do your research, find out where your homeland connection lies, find out what where the police precincts are and hospitals and medical facilities are in your destination, how you handle a crisis when it arises at 2 a.m. in the morning. You know, certainly the parent does not want to receive their call from their young traveler at 2 a.m. that, you know, they've been robbed or something even more tragic than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Beth Holloway's here. We're talking about her program, Vanished, on the Lifetime television network. How busy is your schedule when it comes to the program, Beth? Are you filming all the time, or what is your schedule?
Well, it's been very busy, but as I said, it's been so rewarding. So it's been a lot, and but I have really. I've just really, and I don't mean to say enjoy, but just really been fulfilled and find it so rewarding to go in and to, if there's any help we can give these families, you know, I feel as if they inspire me with hope, and, you know, and I hope I inspire them as well. So it's been good for me. And the parents are always grateful just to have any attention brought into their loved ones' cases. So it doesn't matter. I don't really factor in my schedule and how much time I'm away from home, because I feel like at this point it's not about me, it's about them, and it's about any kind of help or assistance that we can give them to further their case or further their search for their missing loved one. So I don't really think about my schedule too much.
That does not surprise me at all. Beth Holloway is here. And what name, I guess my last question, Beth, we've got about 3 minutes left to you, is when it comes to strength and when it comes to families of missing loved ones, and I think of you, obviously. I think of Drew and Joyce Kessie and all of the families that I've interviewed over the years and talked to on my program, and the ones that we see in on the media, and how they can turn around their tragedy and use it as strength to help others. And if I could just get you to comment on that for the last couple of minutes of the program. What is it that makes that person, yourself included, be able to turn their strength and focus it towards helping others? Because you couldn't blame some people to say, just that's enough, I can't do any more. But it just seems like folks like you, the strength just keeps going.
Well, you're exactly right, first, and I can't explain it, but what I'm seeing time after time after time again, there is that common thread among parents and families who have a missing murdered loved one, and what they do. I mean, we have to start off with John Walsh, and then we look at the work that Mark Lunsford, yeah, Drew Kessie. I mean, it's almost like endless, but it's, for some reason, there's that common thread that when this tragedy occurs, they want to do everything in their power to prevent this tragedy from happening to another family, or in perhaps some way to be able to help them as they were helped. As I said, we received so much support that sustained us in the search for Natalie that, you know, it's like you make a commitment when all this help and assistance is coming in that I will do the same, that I will in turn take my tragedy and turn it to, you know, sharing life lessons with others. But I agree. It is a common thread among all families, and it's become more and more. I've become more cognizant of it, I guess, and working with the families to see how each one has turned their tragedy into, as I said, a learning experience for others and sharing hard lessons. But I can't explain it, but it certainly is a common thread.
Well, it's strength, it's determination, and you know, it's something that we're all. Also proud of you for, Beth. The show has Vanished. It's on Lifetime television. And, of course, Beth Holloway hosts it. And it's always a pleasure, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Beth Holloway from, you know her. She's got her show Banished with Beth Holloway on Lifetime TV, and it's been 6 years, and still no justice for the Holloway family. Hopefully someday there will be. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Blink from Blink on Crime and another update on what's been going on at that Anthony trial. I'm going to take a quick break and have a big drink of Haterade here, and we shall return. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Beth Holloway, hardworking gal, certainly a victim. Her family, her, Dave, everyone else associated have not seen justice yet. Joran Vandersloot still sitting in a Peruvian jail. Hopefully he'll never see the light of day again. And maybe someday there will be justice for the Holloway family. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And like I said before, we're going to come back with a Blink from Blink on Crime. And for those of you that are following along in the forum, if you have questions for Blink, I will be following along too, and if I can pick up on the question, I will ask your question for you. So in a couple of minutes, we'll have Blink from Blink on Crime here to discuss the ongoing craziness at the Casey Anthony trial and just what's been going on. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. My next guest, you know Blink from Blink on Crime, someone who's been covering the Anthony trial just as thoroughly as anyone could. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Dana. How are you?
Not too bad. What did you have for dinner? Tonight I had a big helping of rotting hamburger with a big drink of Haterade beside that, and I feel much refreshed now. How about you?
Not sure where that came from. Was that a cadaver reference or a canine reference?
Yes, and Linda Kenny Bodden with her everyone's drinking Haterade that doesn't agree with what she and the defense are saying.
I think it's Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I know, but she calls it, no, she, you know, you see, she's been on a few shows and she's called it Haterade. See, you hate, anyway, never mind.
I think it's because on my site I did a piece where I put her bobblehead in a pitcher of Kool-Aid swirling around.
I think you're probably right. Now, before we get to what's been going on since you were on last week, let's talk about the media coverage a little bit, in particular the Geraldo, Craig Rivera, Michael Bodden, Linda Kenny Bodden, Kobolinski, all who have been attached to the defense in one way or the other. Even our friend Wendy Murphy, once again on the Today Show, I believe, you sent me a comment talking about an acquittal. What's going on with the media, in particular the popularity of the Boddens with Geraldo and all the craziness that's getting spewed out there?
Well, my first reaction is, for the most part, the mainstream media does not know how to research cases. And that is disconcerting, to say the least. Because what I'm hearing is tidbits. I mean, we talked about the Today Show appearance this morning. Not only was Wendy's, and, you know, I like Wendy. I think maybe she's just PR savvy, and she's just capitalizing on having an opposing opinion and making a lot of appearances.
Yep.
I wouldn't fault her for that necessarily, except she is a former prosecutor, so they're probably not going to be fond of her stance, as opposed to, say, somebody like Robin Sachs, who, you know, she's always prosecution, you know, forward, if you will. But I think that I'm seeing pundits just wanting to be pundits, and it has so little to do with the facts of the case. And, you know, it's upsetting. One of the contrasts is that when you look at, you know, the forum Scared Monkeys and the Blink on Crime site, you see folks that are so interested in this case. They know these facts so well.
Right.
When they see them misrepresented or just erroneous, really, they're on them.
Yeah,
they're like, you know, how can you not know that Casey's car was not missing for, you know, 3 days, and that the span date of the potential of her demise was the 16th through the 18th of June? The prosecution has never said that.
Mm-hmm.
They're clear of when they believe that Kaylee Anthony died, and that was on the 16th of June. That's exactly what the affidavit says. That's what the arrest warrant says, and that's what the indictment says. So there really shouldn't be any kind of ambiguity in my mind.
When you and I'm following along in the forum, by the way, and if any of you, like last week, have questions for Blink, post them. If I come across them, I'll certainly ask them for you. In fact, there's a comment here about Dr. Drew. You can take it or leave it as far as his show goes, as far as I'm concerned, but he's made a comment apparently tonight, according to the forum, that he talked to George Anthony's ex-wife, and George Anthony's ex-wife was saying George is a liar. Well, usually exes don't say very good things about their... So you don't have to be Dr. Drew to figure that out. But anyway, it's that kind of craziness. And, you know, the Kobolinsky, whatever his name is...
Larry.
Yeah. Oh,
Dr. Kobolinsky, yes.
Yeah, and seeing him, he's, you know, to be honest with you, he's sickening. I can't think of another way...
Well, here's a thought. He was not paid by the defense... And he was speaking about this case for literally 6 to 12 months, and they didn't hire him or retain him as an expert witness.
Right.
If I were him, I'd be laying low.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
Yeah, I think so, too. All right. Let's talk about since last week we've had police officers testify. Today, some that I watched, it's amazing, and it gives you a whole new respect, again, for the juror system. Having to sit and listen to the internet expert, a Canadian, by the way, one of them, talking about this slash that and dollar sign this and that means she did this and that. How the hell do you stay interested in something like that? But from what I hear, the jury was. Let's talk about this Blink from Blink on Crime. What's been going on since we talked last?
Well, I will say, Dana, I have to be honest. I think Jose Baez has done a masterful job in defending his client, and I have to be honest with you, I have completely changed my position. I think she may be innocent.
Yeah, there you go. I knew this would come, yeah.
Who ticked you off?
I knew this would come eventually. See, Wendy Murphy, she's got this thing nailed.
It didn't work.
No.
How come I can't do that?
Yeah, I know. Okay. Well, we'll see if we can get you on Dr. Drew or something. I don't know.
I'm fine just right here. Thank you, Dana. But somewhat seriously, this is a rough week. The piece that I put out, you know, literally probably 30 minutes ago was because I had been working for 3 days on an update for the week encompassing, you know, Karen Forsberg Lowe, who is the FBI analyst on the hair analysis, microscopic hair analysis, and Special Agent Rickenbacker from the FBI, who went over the extraneous samples that were not packaged in the paint cans, but simply paper boxes, if you will, of different sections of the liner and also of the tire cover. And Dr. Voss testified again. Can I say man crush, platonic man crush, due respect to Mr. Blink?
Okay, sure.
He's okay with it. I said, I want to follow him around under that lab coat and not in a creepy way.
Okay.
Wow. I mean, he just reeks knowledge in this area. And I think what is amazing about his testimony is the layperson, the juror, that finds this either, you know, I don't know, macabre or difficult or disturbing, or it may perhaps even a bit hard to understand. He's addressing, he's just a fantastic witness and able to back it up. And Jose Baez could not shake him.
No. And is that an inexperience level by Baez, or is it just too good a witness, or is, you know, what are your thoughts?
I think that Dr. Voss, I might say that this is the first criminal case he's ever testified in.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I think he's a natural. I don't think it's that situation where if I were to explain to him his appeal in a jury setting as an expert witness, I think he would lose it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
It's almost like telling the most, you know, beautiful girl in the world how beautiful she is, and then she all of a sudden is not that beautiful. That makes sense.
Yes. No, it makes sense.
He's natural. This is a subject that is very pure to him, and he's amazing at it, and we need about 10 more of him. I think he did an artful job at discussing the merits of the case. He did not embellish. He did not balk under, you know, one of the things that he said, which, you know, is a laugh out loud. Not a lots of luck, as Chaney Mason would have you think that means. But he said to Jose Baez at one point when he was questioning him in the redirect, I believe, he said, "You just don't even know what's going on here." Let me explain.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in an offensive way. It was because, he, you know, Jose Baez is literally trying to confuse him and cause him to be, you know, I don't know, acerbic in some way, because he thinks that'll play well to a jury, but it's just wrong. You know, it's just the wrong approach. I have not seen any forward motion from the defense, and I'm looking for it. I want to be able to say in some way this is a fair fight. It's so not.
In fact, that
yeah.
we can segue that into a question on the forum I hear see here for you. It says, I have a question for Blink. Do you think that if Casey is found guilty of murder, one, she is likely more likely to get the death penalty now because of the defense strategy than she would have been if the defense had taken a different approach? And if, again, if you're listening, you're following along in the forum, you have a question for Blink, go ahead, post it, and if I see it, I will certainly ask it.
Well, I think, first of all, that's an excellent question. What I think that is at play is, for instance, today, the Dr. Bradley, who owns the software for Cache3, which is a forensic tool
yep.
for replacing or restoring, if you will, a cached inventory from either unallocated or regular, you know, I guess across the board, if you think somebody's not going to see it, they have the capacity to do that. And I thought he was an extremely effective witness.
Yep.
What concerned me was that he came up with approximately, you ready for this, 92 searches for chloroform.
Right.
And while you and I both know that my personal opinion is that Casey was not the first person to search that on that computer. I mean, I think that is what the defense is going to introduce if they decide to put on their own case and their own defense. I feel strongly about that after listening to Jose Baez's questions to this witness. But if I'm, you know, a layperson and I'm a juror, when I left today, that is so impactful. Who would be searching for that 92 times and have a dead baby months later?
Yep.
It's just huge. Whether or not you, and that was, by the way, after the testimony of Dr. Rickenbacker from the FBI saying there's actually chloroform residue, not just the air samples. There's chloroform residue on parts of the liner, and there is chemicals consistent with chloroform residue on the left and the right side of the trunk liner. So where I see this going is they're concentrating on that stain, and they're getting that evidence in. There
yeah.
is a concentration of chloroform in what I'll call the trunk, the tire cover area within the trunk liner, and then downward into the wheel well of the car. So, you know, Jose Baez isn't going to be able to say, if somebody threw in a bathing suit and left it in there, which is what he asked Dr. Bradley today, would that, you know, result in a chloroform result? And his response was essentially, I'm not aware that that would result in a chloroform result. I would have liked him to say, you know, I was given the information that the Anthony's don't even use chloroform in their pool.
No.
They never did.
When you, didn't they come up with Febreze that was causing the chloroform reading in the back of the trunk, too? I don't know. That's kind of good.
Well, no, the low levels of chloroform are indicative of some cleaning products.
Right.
That's undebated. But here's the issue. The FBI was given liner samples and other samples, but liner samples that were cut, processed in, not in the off-gassing situation, which is what was given to the Oak Ridge lab and Dr. Voss. They're entirely different methods, entirely different testing. This was actually the gastrospectrometer, whereby that is different than Oak Ridge, where it was done by the LIBS, which is where they use a laser onto the surface, and they, as Dr. Voss will tell you, they excite the neurons. They take them from a non-excited phase to an excited phase, and then they extract that data. And by the way, I am no scientist.
Okay.
I'm relaying information, so if I'm off by, a neuron or proton or electron, I apologize.
Sure.
But essentially, they're not apples-to-apples comparisons, but they're still highly effective because it's still saying that on a base level, chloroform is present. Now, it's amplified by one test because the testing method allows for that. But it's still equally present in a way that one would not expect, even in low levels from the FBI reading. They actually corroborate each other. And I don't think the state tied those two together yet, but I believe they will.
Blink
from pace. They're not going to be rushed.
Blink from Blink on Crime is here, and we're talking, obviously, the Anthony case. And there's a great question Magic Ice posts in the forum. If you think that Baez came up with this defense, Casey had a big part of it, and when do you think that they came up with the Kaylee drowned in the pool and George New routine? Because that has been big in the media, that all of a sudden, how can a defense lawyer... who knew, and a lot of the pundits are saying this, that his client is claiming that this was all an accident, would sit back and wait 3 years before bringing this up, and that he's absolutely insane for not bringing it up and trying to make a deal on behalf of his client because of the accident, suggestion.
I think that he is going to be very stressed to figure out how to explain that.
Yep.
I think, again, it's an excellent question, because you have two issues here. Now you have an ethical issue with regard to his representation of his client. When did he know this? Because I'll tell you right now, here's a thought. Did he know that his client disposed of her child and that she was deceased while he had lawyers parading in front of the judge? I'll tell you specifically, Todd Macaluso in front of Stan Strickland saying, somebody else put this child here.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else is responsible for the murder of this child. Well, he was a lawyer for this defense. So at what point did his client divulge this information? And at what point is there an ethical responsibility to relay this? Moreover, it is not a felony in Florida for a improper burial, but what are the ethical obligations of anyone to report that is the question. What are the ethical obligations if Mr. Baez is aware of a felony, enacted against his client that he has not reported? There's 100 ways to Sunday of what is wrong with this defense's opening argument. And the thing is, it's an opening argument. It's not evidence. So, in essence, they could pretty much say what they want, and they have. As we go along, you're going to see that this is a simple equation of over-promising and under-delivering. It's like the old sales adage. You just never do that. And this jury is going to be reminded vehemently that the defense had a commitment and an all-in strategy, if you will, in this case, up front, and they're not going to be able to deliver on any of it. What I will say is that today, the evidence presented regarding the searches, and you know I've said this to you before, I do think it's George that was on the 17th for whatever reason. I think Casey was checking it out. I think she framed the guy. I think on the 24th, she's already telling Amy Huizenga, oh, my dad borrowed the car and it smells.
Mm-hmm.
you know, this isn't rocket science. This girl had about a week to figure out how this was not going to be her fault. And with, again, with regard to today's testimony, you have, you know, Garris Handler, Jason Forgey, Sergeant Jason Forgey, who trained the other canine in this case, Bones, who is now, well, he's out of service now, but he was handled by Kristen Brewer, Sergeant Kristen Brewer at the time. And these canines hit at the same general place in the Anthony's backyard within 6 to 8 feet of one another as an estimate, and neither one of them hit anywhere near the pool.
Right.
And you have Garris on video finding a submerged deceased individual. Submerge is important here. Within 48 hours of that person indicated missing, who had a final alert on the you know, the shore of this body of water. So he knows. I mean, clearly there's you know, years and years of supporting evidence that these canines are effective beyond a shadow of a doubt in an active search mode and not a training aid situation. But that was so impactful to this jury. Jason Forgey especially, Sergeant Forgey, is so effective. There was no question in my mind that I know. Well, here's another thought. There was no question in Jose Baez's mind, because in the middle of his testimony, he said, "We don't dispute there was a dead body in the backyard."
Right.
Hello? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Blink from Blink on Crimes here. When you think about Blink testifying in court, and you learn very early on, and it's a lesson I learned too, that credibility is all about articulation. And if you're able to get on the stand and articulate what you have to say, your evidence, your credibility will be able to, you know, shoot through the roof. And the prosecution has been able to have decent credibility and decent articulation from their witnesses. It'll be interesting to see, like you say, if a defense is put on. But some questions in the forum. Florida Treasure mentions one, and it's a good one about the Anthonys. They have now testified for the prosecution. They may or may not get called for the defense. What about the credibility of the Anthonys and George and Cindy and I guess Lee? And then the second part of this question comes from our old friend Red. He's taken a step aside from watching Wendy Murphy promotional videos to ask this question. Does she think that Chaney Mason wishes he could gnaw off his arm, get out of this trial as soon as possible, run out the door with his hair on fire, and who would want the ick on them in this case? It's a loser all the way around for the defense. So two questions for you.
The first question, yes, it's an excellent question, but I'll guarantee you this. The Anthonys have been subpoenaed by the defense. Doesn't mean they'll put on the defense.
Right.
But they have been subpoenaed by the defense. Pretty much, here's how this works. The turnstile of witnesses, as they testify for the prosecution, as they clear the door, are being served.
Yeah, I hear that.
And, you know, I say that a bit glibly, but it's true. I mean, the defense is reserving the opportunity to present a defense with these witnesses, as they should. And I don't see how they have a chance in Hades without putting Casey Anthony on the stand. The Anthonys are married to their statements to the extent that, keep in mind, we have a ways to go in the prosecution's case. And they have done such a masterful job at laying it out. You know, think about this. There are witnesses that are strong witnesses in this case and effective witnesses that haven't been called by the prosecution. Sergeant Allen. Sergeant Allen is, you know, Corporal Melick's supervisor in this scenario. He is involved in one of the, you know, lengthiest, surreptitious recordings in Universal there is, which is a subject of a Miranda issue. One has to question why he hasn't been called. Eric Edwards, Detective Edwards, he has not been called. He's best known, by the way, he's a brilliant, brilliant interrogator and, in my opinion, detective. And one of the things he did really well was putting together the timeline. He's the calendar guy. He's the one interviewing, you know, everyone in this case, trying to nail the dates down in, you know, kind of an easy way. Detective Abby Wells, who at the Universal interview got Casey to talk, you know, kind of unguarded, if you will. And if you listen very carefully, I'm not going to tell you now, but there's a little soundbite in there from Casey that I think she gave Kaylee's location away.
Oh, really? Okay.
I do. I put out a piece, you know, late today because this week has been so heavy in the forensics.
Right.
And I think that folks, you know, it's the ebb and flow of a case. It's such an emotional ride, and it is. If you're following it and you're vested in it, this week was kind of like the down and dirty without emotion. It was, here's the facts, here we go. And then today, you know, I just put out a piece about a sidebar talk. And if you can believe it, Jose Baez objected to the photos of Casey Anthony dancing, you know, on a stage because he was concerned that jurors would think she might be a lesbian.
Yeah, I heard that. Jeez.
How many hot coals can this guy miss?
Yeah.
How does he do it? If a juror felt that she was not in situations with multiple male partners, an unknown baby daddy, leaving the home under the guise of work to meet with men, and it was to meet with a woman, that is like Christmas in June for this defense. There's no filicide cases. There's not really, with the exception of one that I posted, which maybe we'll see in a week as a suspect.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't happen. And for him to say that, I was shocked. I get that maybe, you know, it just, the conflict to the defense, which I believe they will call, which is a post-traumatic stress disorder, and his objections are all over the place.
Yeah.
None of it has any continuity. None of it has any direction. And I still feel like there's a bunch of folks sitting at that table, Chaney Mason included, that have no idea what's going on. Their hands are over their eyes, and they just want it to be over.
Yep, and they got extra strength Tylenol in their pockets. Blink from Blink on Crime is here. Another question from the forum, Blink. It says, do you think that Cindy's MySpace posting will be brought out for the jury to hear? That's a good question, too.
I don't.
No?
I don't. I think that it is inflammatory. I think it was not admitted with good reason. Because you can't necessarily admit it on its own in context. And there's other photos that she has set herself. She has not uploaded. So it's a mishmash. And clearly, if I read that, I think she's accusing her daughter of, by some means, taking Kaylee away.
Yeah.
And I don't think... I think that it would be inflammatory over the probative value of it.
That will be interesting. Let's talk a little bit about, Baez. You know, we could have four shows in a row just about his defense strategy, and everyone knows that he's probably using Geraldo and the Boddens as his technical experts to tell him what questions to ask. It is mind-boggling. We mentioned this last show, and I've got a couple of email questions about it again this week, about ineffective counsel and where that might go. And then after that, let's talk about the... Let's call it the hamburger defense. Remember the old commercial years ago with the old gal saying, where's the beef? Well, is the beef going to save Casey Anthony?
I don't remember the commercial because I was probably four.
Okay, all right. I guess I asked for that. Oh, God.
All right, that's not entirely true. Moving on. I think that ineffective counsel... In a case like this, Well, there's a couple of answers. My first answer is less than 1% of appellate issues for ineffective counsel in the country, in the United States, are granted. In Florida, less.
Really? Okay.
Yes. And I feel that there's such a... Let me say this a different way. I think he's grossly ineffective. I think it would have legs if there was ever an opportunity, and this is the burden, by the way, that would overturn the verdict. The argument has to be that it would result in a different verdict. And I don't think that case could ever be made because of the overwhelming nature of the evidence. And by the way, we're not even at a stage where we can evaluate that, because it would also take into consideration, you know, juror questions once they're deliberating, the time that they deliberate, any issues regarding the jury. That has to come in. There, you know, and it won't. I really believe that this girl is going to spend the rest of her natural life in prison. And I don't think she's getting out. And I think that it has everything to do with the fact that this case should have been pled, but Jose Baez was paid not to. Yeah. And I don't think Casey knows that.
I agree. Oh, boy, I agree. Listen, Blink from Blink on Crime is here. We have another couple of minutes with Blink, and then I'm going to take your calls for the last 10 minutes of the program. Let's talk about, we've got a couple of days left, Saturday, if they're going to try the case on Saturday. What do you expect us to see and hear?
I expect the next folks to be who I think is going to be such a hugely impactful witness is Dr. Neil Haskell, Dr. Hall, and Dr. Neil Haskell is the entomologist, and excuse me, the forensic entomologist, and what he's going to be able to do, and this is such a critical element of this case, is tie the blowfly cycle, blowflies being what I'll call the carrion flies,
right.
Death flies, if you will. I've done a couple of pieces and some, you know, minorly glib images associated with fame. But what he does is he's going to tell us about the levels of decomposition and the associated nastiness that comes with that. And I'm certainly paraphrasing because I don't want to offend anyone in the audience. About 3 months ago, I did some fairly intensive studying on this very subject, and decomposition in general, not just in the entomologist field. I'll be honest with you. It is macabre. I hated it. It was so hard to get through visually, but I learned more than I ever want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those studies had to do with Dr. Haskell testifying in the Danielle Van Dam case, which you know well.
Sure, yep.
And he was such an effective witness, if you can believe us. He was hired by the defense in this case, which is rare for him. He was so effective that the prosecution's entomologist was fired and not put on the stand. And I will say this, in that case, the prosecution's entomologist and some of the evidence in that case was simply not vetted thoroughly enough. He actually found things that should have been found by the prosecution's witness. And it didn't change the face of the case. He wasn't, you know, he was certainly forthright, but it was obvious that he was a better witness. That, I believe, is going to come into play. He's a strong witness. He's not going to be just an entomologist. He's going to talk about a bit of taphony. He's going to talk about, which is, you know, the burial issues associated with the defendant and or a corpse. He's going to talk about, because he's qualified to, he's going to talk about both the trunk liner, potentially the Anthony backyard, and also the recovery scene and what was found. He works in tandem and has worked, this is very important, he has worked with Dr. Bill Bass from Oak Ridge Labs, the decay facility, Dr. Arpad Voss. It's kind of a trio of, can I say this? the trio of death, the trio of decomposition. These are the folks that, you know, if there is an injustice, if there is a foul play situation, you want these investigators on the scene.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be anything left to the imagination when these doctors are finished testifying for this case. Dr. Haskell specifically. Dr. Voss is like, what is he, like a secret weapon? He's, you know, you light him as a firecracker and he's an M80.
I like that.
And, but Dr. Haskell's going to come in as an M80, if I can give that analogy.
What about computer forensics? One of the last questions here in the forum, and I apologize if I missed any questions. We'll try to get to them next week. Will Casey's laptop come into the trial?
It will come in, but I think they did a fair job. I think she did a fair job of blasting it. I don't know what they're going to be able to recover from it. I think more importantly, I should say what was presented thus far is that they're not going to be able to specifically determine whether George or Casey was utilizing some of those search mechanisms. And that's going to come back in the defense's case if they present one. It's going to be all George. And I do think there's some realness to that because, you know, I can't just be prosecution.
No, of course.
Objectively.
Yeah.
There is some interpretable evidence, and I think that will come down to the computer. I don't know what Casey did to the laptop, but to my knowledge, the unallocated clusters are fairly dead. Although, it's possible that encompasses their case in chief. I just don't see that.
What about Casey or the defense naming? 1, 2, 3, these were the people who searched for chloroform. Do you think that's possible?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question, Dana.
Do you think that the defense will come forward and say that Casey now says that these three people, whoever they are actually the people that were using her computer doing those searches, not her?
I believe it. If the defense goes on, they're going to say it was George.
Yeah.
They're going to say what and I do, to an extent, believe this. I reported on this extensively. If I go through the navigation, and this didn't happen, and this came out in testimony today, and I'm not quite sure, you know, the regular layperson pulled it out, extrapolated it, but what I heard Dr. Bradley say was I was chartered with understanding what the search flow, you know, kind of like the 10,000 foot versus the 30,000 foot. I wasn't chartered with figuring out, you know, the personal navigational study of a user or an end user navigational study. Having, you know, an ad agency background, I have. And when I look at that natural navigation, and what I see is, you know, potentially George sitting down on Firefox, not logging in and doing his thing, because there's encrypted transactions within that search flow.
Right.
That were not discussed. I personally think that was a misstep on the state's part. I think that they have got to address who was on what. At this juncture, it doesn't serve them to prove that it was potentially George. It proves them to not know. I don't know. It could have been either one. But when it comes down to the March 21st search, there was a March 17th search and then a March 21st search, which I happen to believe is Casey. I believe she was reviewing George's search history. And I think that it goes to her motive where she was talking to Amy Huizenga about the fact that her mom was going to give her the house and they were going to move in there. I think she was going to make that happen. I think she was going to accuse George of having his extracurricular activities because she now had proof of it. We know she was looking at his history and blow that up and potentially live there.
It
wasn't working. George knew she wasn't working.
Yeah.
It was clear. He had caused that problem in that house before, and it got him a ticket out.
That is true.
That's what happened. He showed up at Sports Authority and said, she's not working, and Cindy said, you're out.
Yeah, that is true. Last question. And I will read it as I see it. It says, when is Mumbles going to wake up and stop the circus that is being led by Bobo in court? And I think we all know what that means.
I believe that Chaney Mason signed on to this case because at 30-plus years, he was not going to retire without the largest case in Florida history having his name attached.
Sure. Yeah.
And I say this with confirmation from colleagues of his that have respected him for many years sharing this information with me. That's their opinion. That is absolutely, I can say this without pause, that is the, you know, barrister bar opinion in Florida as to why he was signed on this case. What I keep it wrong, and as this is a case of many prominent defense attorneys, he didn't do his research. He had folks doing that for him. He went full steam ahead. And in my mind, when I saw the, I think we might have touched on this last week, Dina, when I saw the jailhouse videos of Casey Anthony and her family, there is no question that I walked away from that thinking Chaney Mason never saw those until they were presented in court. Because if he had, this preeminent criminal defense attorney, probably in the United States, just not Florida, in my mind, would never in a million years have put on that opening statement.
Yeah.
Can't support any of it.
I agree. Blink from blinkoncrime.com, of course, scaredmonkeys.com, the forum at Scared Monkeys. We'll be covering this story day by day, week by week, and we'll have Blink on again next week to give us more updates as far as what's been going on in this fascinating trial of, I'll steal this from not Nancy Grace, the tot mom in Florida. Thank you, Blink.
Take care. Be well, Dana.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, it's now your turn. 1-306-842-7884. Do you think that the prosecution are winning their case? Do you think that the defense has thrown out any evidence that would bring out that reasonable doubt towards the jury? You just never know with juries. Of course, I think it's been relatively clear here on the program that, my opinion is that the prosecution has been doing an excellent job. A lot of the pundits on the TV shows, Headline News in particular, are saying that the defense is doing a good job and the prosecution really hasn't proven anything yet. Now you have your turn. 1-306-842-7884. What about the apparent hissy fit that Casey threw in court today? I've seen some pictures. I didn't actually see that. You see the dopey picture of her with the fish lips stuck out, the pouting little girl. I consider it to be with that bottom lip stuck out and playing for the camera the way that she is. You know, it's amazing what the truth will do for you, and I think the truth is something that Casey Anthony doesn't know anything about. 1-306-842-7884. What about Geraldo and all those others out there? Geraldo bringing up the Miranda issue, the Bodens, a lot of them were attached to the defense at one time and are now trying to make a, a mark for themselves in the media with their opinions. Is this the case of the century? I'm not sure if it is or it isn't. It certainly is fascinating, and it will go on for several more weeks, and the decision, the ruling, the verdict from the jury, when it finally does come down, will be exciting, to say the least. So we've got about 5 minutes left on the program. If you want to call in, 1-306-842-7884. And what we'll do here on the program is each week we will bring Blink or someone that has been following the trial to come on and give you their analysis as far as what's been going on, not just small pieces and tidbits like you see on cable news. Will give them an opportunity to actually speak their mind. What'd you think of Beth Holloway coming on the show tonight? It was nice to hear from Beth again, and thanks for Red for setting that up. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Scotty.
Hey, how are you?
Okay. I was just wondering what your opinion was on the Anthonys. Their lawyer was off today and was asked why, if the Anthonys blamed Jose or their daughter for this, I guess, opening statement, Lippman went on to say that, well, you know, they understand that they're trying to save Casey's life. Well, if they're so understanding, you know, why did they talk about suing people that Mint brought it up? It just sounds hinky to me.
Yeah, you know what, and that's a great question, and I thank you for calling in. I won't keep you on the line because you have to pay for this call, but I will answer it off air, so thanks for calling. When you see this, and we've talked about it before with George and Cindy, and they're trying to save their daughter. They've lost their granddaughter, I think, was the comment that the caller, she was breaking up a little bit, made, and a good comment. You know, put yourself in that position, and I hope to God you never are in that position. But the media has played such a big picture in this. And for George and Cindy, and through their lawyer now, to make comments to see whether or not, you know, the opening statement was something that they'll respond to, I'm sure their lawyer has told them, you know, keep it to the testimony that's on the stand. Don't respond to anything else. This was the strategy that they used. I can tell you this. If that was my daughter making that accusation against me, daughter or not, you would soon, what's the term you use, wash your hands of that person very quickly. So I'm sure that the Anthony's attorney is coaching them as far as far as what to say when they do get on the stand, and any response that he's making on their behalf is going to be interesting. Are they turncoats, or are they just trying to save their daughter? Excellent question. See, I hate when that phone does that. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Dana, how are you this evening?
I'm fine. I'm just fine. You and I are taking some flack about Wendy Murphy through the email today, but hell, you know, Wendy is just being Wendy when she goes on the Today Show and does this sort of stuff. We just go back to the, you know, Mike Nifong and the Duke Lacrosse case, and Wendy will be the first one to admit she's never been afraid to speak her opinion. But Red from ScaredMonkeys.com is on. Let's talk a little bit about Beth Holloway before we get into this. It was sure nice to have you arrange that for me, and I had a nice chat with Beth this afternoon, and what a classy, courageous lady.
You know, Dana, as you know, as often as I do, you know, speak to Beth, it's always difficult to try to say, you know, can you do an interview? Because you really just don't want to do that every single time you talk to her. And I know it's got to be it's difficult, obviously. And she's been, and of course she's been so absolutely insanely busy with so many things going on, especially with the new show, that sometimes it's just almost impossible to get a hold of her. But it is amazing to think, after all this time, the effort she puts into helping other families and keeping high profile a visual on many cases that probably a lot of people have forgotten. And all I can think of when I go back to this, because trust me, I mean, you know that Scared Monkeys did not originally start out as a missing persons, you know, victims' right advocate website.
Right.
We were more political. And I took a lot of flack way back when from many of my fellow bloggers about going this direction and this route, but I thought it was the right thing to do, and it became a passion, much like what Beth has done. And what they used to say, and many prominent people used to say, but she's the only one getting the attention. And I said to them back then, and I said to many media producers, and I said to many, many people, trust me, this case is going to shed so much light on so many other missing persons cases because of the coverage that was taking place. And ultimately, that's what happened. Media outlets that never covered missing persons stories suddenly started covering them. The Nancy Graces of the world started covering cases that they never dreamed of covering.
Yep.
Because trust me, I had many a producer way back in 2005 when we were trying to have them cover stories say to me, what does the family look like?
Yep.
Can they speak? Can they whatever? Now, you tell me, with all the cases that we've seen in the media since 2005 going forward, how many of those cases of little kids missing from trailer parks would ever have been on if it wasn't for the prominence that came from, you know, the visuals that came out of, and the interest that came out of Natalie Holloway's story?
Yep. Yep. Oh, well said. Well said. Your thoughts on what's been going on with the Anthony trial, as crazy as it's been?
In honor of watching some of my friends' kids play baseball the other day, in softball, I wanted to ask Blink this question: does the court have a mercy rule?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, seriously.
Sure.
This is sad. Yeah. In some cases, that we have a case like this where a little girl has been murdered. You have a woman who's on trial for her life. You've got the state that is so well organized. It's frightening how well organized they are. Mm-hmm. When you look at that evidence table, and then you look at the defense table, and they can't find a file.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me that Jose Baez is as clueless as he is. And it's almost, when you watch these pundits, it's almost like they have to make excuses for him.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's almost like they're... It reminds me of a sporting event where the score is 40-0 at halftime, and somehow those announcers are telling us, but don't turn us off because, you know, the other team could come back in the second half.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I mean, it's more insult. Just as every day goes by, the next day becomes more insulting than the day before, where Baez comes out with some clueless objection, some offensive objection, or an offensive comment. I mean, how does the normal person, I mean, and you think about the jury, just normal people, right? What must they think when an attorney makes just a ludicrous comment about hamburger meat?
Yep.
I mean, seriously, it's almost like it's a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, it's become a joke to him. I mean, as he can throw out a preposterous, idiotic statement, and then I guess go out and carouse outside the courtroom with some girls and take some pictures,
mm-hmm.
And he made a comment before this trial started that this case would not define him. Au contraire, mon frère. You have been defined. You have been found wanting,
yeah.
And you are guilty of being a fool. This case will, I mean, think about the O.J. case, how that defined people. It defined the judge in that case,
yep.
Christopher Darden,
yep.
Marcia Clark, all of these people, it defined them for better or for worse.
Yep. No, you're...
And it's truly amazing that when we think about it, this girl's life is in this guy's hands.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I agree. Signed, sealed, delivered. He blows. Like, he's probably the worst attorney I've seen in a long time. And, you know, maybe we're all wrong, but I don't think so. Red, thank you, sir.
Take care, Dana. Great show. I'll talk to you later, bud.
Right. Bye-bye. That's Red from Scared Monkeys. And, yeah, signed, sealed, delivered. He blows. Like, this is... How he comes up with this stuff in the questions in the forum tonight, who came up with the idea for the opening statement? When did the defense finally, when did they know about this or decide that they were going to use this drowning as the defense? And I don't know, how many more weeks will this go? What will the prosecution, I think, will continue to meticulously present their case, put the pieces together in the puzzle, and what will the defense do? The big case will be, the big thing in this case will be, will Casey Anthony take the stand? That's going to be fascinating. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for everyone that participated in the program tonight. I appreciate that. We'll see you soon here again on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night.
been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.